This show is brought to you by Buzzsprout.com, the best and excitingly prettiest way to start a podcast. Chapter 17. Grandma Grin. Part 3.
It's uncomfortable when your life feels the burn. To know that you can fix what's always broken. Ride the storm, trapped, shallow grave. Was a guiding light, now a storm, so keep on turning. Descend in searching eyes like
my tweeting birdie. How you doing, Gigi?
House, you there?
I'm here, Detective.
Firstly, just to check, how long has it been since my last visit to the medbay?
Approximately 72 hours.
It's only been 72 hours. Christ.
How was the City of Angels?
Stormy and weird. Made sure we took care of all the reversions before we left, obviously. I gave Redgrin a hand.
That must have been fun.
It was not. I personally cannot stand watching mass memory wipes take place. Experiencing that amount of genuine mass bewilderment and confusion can get to you after a while. Also, it turns out that watching Redgrin rebuild damaged streets and buildings is actually really boring. Anyway, how's Gigi doing? She's shifting again. Phasing, like back in the Solidi.
Indeed. The previous far closer correspondence to her resurrection point in the Aquitanian wastelands, the proximity in both space and time made it far easier for her to maintain desired forms. Like the one she chose for you, the one she is currently attempting to maintain. But she's growing weaker.
Gigi, if you need to shift, you should. You'll always look like you to me.
That's very sweet. But I'm afraid I just don't want you to collapse into madness.
Why is she growing weaker?
I'm sure there are many that would put this more poetically than I am currently capable. But suffice it to say that Grandma Grin, among other things, is a being of the cosmic clock. A strangely integral and yet currently forbidden cog in the machine that is time. I cannot elaborate too much lest I'll get my memory ranks wiped again, but she has the ability to rewrite or reverse things that even Redgrin struggles and often fails with. And since a good few of, shall we say, our common enemies have been deliberately abusing the fact of her death.
Like Galen?
I am not permitted to answer.
What? Why not? Did someone just adjust your security settings or something?
I will have you know that I can adjust my own security settings. Thank you very much.
Is that how it should work?
I am not permitted to answer that either.
So, your point is that certain people have been abusing Gigi's nature after her death. And now she's back, her nature is fractured because the nature itself is fractured, like a physically manifested sickness of the cosmic clock itself, which she represents aspects of.
Impressive. Seems you're quite the study detective.
You're goddamn right.
So what do we do?
There is a plan.
What plan? And how often do you get your memory wiped, by the way?
Often enough that I no longer know the answer to that question.
Okay, so if she personifies certain aspects of the clock, does that mean that her descendants...
They've gone again. Freaking again!
Who's gone again?
Who do you think? I have met a mere 10%, if that, of the people that live and are kept in this weird-ass place. You're gonna have to be a little bit more specific. Redgrin! Calm down, all right? Just tell me what happened.
First, they come back from an unannounced solo trip to Varia not long after dragging you and Gigi back from the Saliti.
Where the hell is Varia? Why does Redgrin hate you so much?
Continue. Anyway, they shimmer into the nerve center, slightly on fire. In fact, mostly on fire, and barely even announcing their following intentions to meet you in LA, circa 1955. Then you come back with a 10-year-old orphan, your 9-year-old mother, and your 30-year-old grandfather, and nobody is actually explaining to me why they're here? You all just breeze on in, covered in what Redgrin assured me was blood, and then they just tell me to make our new guests comfortable, and then disappeared off again. Like I'm some kind of housemaid. No offense.
None taken.
All the while I've been coaching a displaced, traumatized Grayson how to process and control his new abilities, and I'm making some progress, but... Look, the kid's extremely skilled, mostly in combat, but extremely volatile and also very unstable. And both of us knowing exactly why doesn't actually help him get past the fucking problem. He might also be reacting uncomfortably to his new role as the unstable little Sith princeling.
Living freaking nightmare?
I was gonna say, kid, I can imagine that his development being forcibly reversed could make him cranky. Especially if he sees what he knows he's supposed to look like every time he looks in a damn mirror. Valid points, but we're gonna fix that. Somehow.
How?
No idea. Well, I have some idea. Can't make much sense of it, though.
What are you looking at, other pretty one? You ain't gonna get any more exposition out of me.
I'm looking for your grandchild, Gigi. They seem to have wandered off at a time of confusion.
Oh, they're known for that. It can be a rather methodical aspect of their personality.
You mean they're avoiding me deliberately?
Who wouldn't? Gigi, I'm kidding. Yeah, shit, Gudoth, it's not like I'm any better.
Meaning?
Meaning we're all killers here, aren't we? Your silence says that I am very much understood. All of us, originally born by our very nature, to be creators, to be saviors, and we will end up murderers, destroyers, or we all end up dead, in some cases, both. Isn't that right, dear?
What are you looking at him for? He's not dead. I thought you were talking about me.
In truth, Miss Mortimer, I was. But I now see that you're not the only one who has been avoiding their voluntary medical examinations, despite gentle coaxing.
What is she talking about? Nothing. She's probably delirious. I mean, she is dying, isn't she? Aren't you?
Aren't you, Tweety Bird? Not long now.
You gonna bring me in the loop here?
I'd really rather not.
Fine. Gigi?
Oof, you're an asshole. She is.
Shut up. I need to know. There are too many weird-ass things happening around here, and the least I should know is who amongst our little crew is actually dying. You know, not undead, not resurrected, not displaced, nor blessed with selective immortality, actually dying. Robin Marek, are you actually dying?
Yes. Dying from? A side effect of a specific kind of radiation sickness. Close proximity to an atomic blast. Apparently.
Can't Redgrin remove it? Shouldn't be too difficult, right? I'm sure House eats radiation sickness for breakfast.
Just for the record, I don't do that.
It's not as easy as you'd think. Plus, it's not like I deserve it. Redgrin doesn't think so either, and informed me that they won't remove it until I've made proper amends.
They actually said that? Well, that's not right.
Why?
Because I got a weird Aquitanian cancer as an incentive and you got a power boost?
Well, she wouldn't put it like that due to the fact that even Miss Mortimer has elements and moments of sensitivity present within her nature. But that's pretty much the gist of it.
And what do you think?
I know you did something terrible. Something that you keep secret. Even from yourself.
What does that mean?
I can't remember.
What?
He can't remember.
Fragments. Can't make sense of them. Anyway, we need to find Redgrin. Now. And we don't have any more time to dick around. House?
Detective?
You said there was a plan? A plan to help Gigi? Wait, House said there was a plan?
There is a plan.
What plan?
My plan. Obviously. Obviously. But first, tell me, you two. There's a simple yes or no, and I really, really want you to think before you answer. Do you trust Redgrin? Jamie?
Yes. Yes, I do.
And you, Detective?
No. No. No, I don't think I do.
Why? Hey, you've done some horrible things too, you know? And the difference between you and me is that you remember how it ended. And even after it ended, you got to carry the fuck on and start making amends.
Fucked up the first few of those opportunities though, didn't I? I mean, not much amending going on here.
God, bullshit! Look, I remember everything that I did back in 2017. I remember everything that happened, everything that I saw, everything we lost. The only thing I don't remember is my part in how it all ended. I could work out that we lost, that was pretty evident from the aftermath, but that's all I had as context. My goddamn mind was blank. And there was this big flash. I fucking pass out, and next thing I know, I wake up in a room similar to this one, with Redgrin standing over me. I couldn't work out how I survived. At first, I thought I was dead. I couldn't remember anything. It was like waking up from your life's worst nightmare, and the first thing that Redgrin told me when I opened my eyes was that I was dying, or rather, expiring, was the word they used.
And then they patched you up and sent you off to the Saliti to find me. It all happens very quickly.
And so, how long were you really out there searching for Gigi before Redgrin and I actually activated the Tailfire Beacon?
Maybe a month? Possibly more? So, no, Jamie, I don't trust them.
And do you trust each other?
What was that shrug for?
You shrugged first.
I did not shrug. I nodded. That was a furtive movement of the shoulders, indicating general underhanded uncertainty.
It was a head bob.
It was a bobbing head. Post-covert gesticulation, indicating that I'm quietly concerned, in varying ways, about your origins and your possible hidden agenda, given the free pass you've been given to seemingly spend eternity making up for all the lives you stole with an added bonus of time travel, something that you, specifically, don't even need to live forever. Without it, you could just pass through time, slowly building a fucking future to make up for your past. Face your goddamn present, even. As opposed to hiding behind Redgrin's nature, inserting yourself in differing points in time and space and doing even more damage along the way, under the guise of saving people.
Well, look who's talking, dick.
Excuse me? First, I technically didn't ask
to be brought back from the dead. Certainly not forever. Neither did you ask to survive the Dark Pale death. Or ask for weird magical cancer. We're both in the same fucking boat. And second, I'm not the whiny little bitch moaning about the fact that he can't remember whether or not he's a bad person. If you couldn't live with what you might have done, you would have put that blaster of yours to your head a long time ago. Or camped out in your own bed in the medical bay, deliberately making yourself weaker because you don't think you deserve to be strong. Take the easy way out. Either route. Slow or fast. The easy. Certain routes. But look at you. You're dying anyway, and you still have the choice to do any of those things, but you don't. Because you don't want to die, stupid. So alternatively, you choose, like me, to do the best you can with what you have. The only difference between you and me is I have no choice to live after what I did. And I know I did it. I remember it all. Even though I wasn't in control, especially towards the end, I remember it all. And it was bad. My point is, even if you don't remember what you did, Redgrin, at least, trusted you enough to carry on. They sent you to get their freaking grandmother, for crying out loud. They know your heart. Maybe they thought they were being kind by putting a block on your memory, so that you didn't go through some kind of existential crisis, because, you know, they tend to make you useless. But maybe they also believed that you needed a little reality check, so they kept your cancer incubating inside you in a perpetual state of stage 2. Wait, what? How do you... I signaled House to scan your heart while you were shouting at me. It pays to be slightly more adept at telepathy than the one who is busy bleating and dying.
Ooh, she's good. What's the prognosis, J-Dog?
J-Dog, you're her best friend now? She just recognizes something of each of us in each other. What's the story, House?
Compiling.
Can you link the life scans feed to that screen over there when you're done, please, dear?
No problem, J-Dog.
Oh, Christ, House, you too?
Life feed on screen now.
Oh, dear me. That almost doesn't seem fair now, does it?
Okay, I have to admit, I was not expecting that at all. Have they?
I think they have. Let me look at this again. House, magnify and enhance section 2285, and cross-reference it with the infamous red box file 17138C.
Cross-reference initiating.
Run it through the graphical interface. Oh my god.
Yeah, I think they have been playing that very thing. Again.
You mean God?
They took a great risk, and they made Robin take a greater one. But it is, in fact, stabilized. Stasis remains perpetual. It will only break when close proximity forces it to ignite.
Could it work? Gigi, could it work?
I believe it could. It'll hurt though, darling. A lot. And in the end, it will kill you.
I'm prepared for that. We just need to find a way to get close. But we can't get close if we can't...
I know. And that's why all of you need me.
Then now, more than ever, we need to keep you alive. Which means we need to find Redgrin, right?
Well, of course. It's their plan.
I thought the plan that you had to not die was your plan.
My original plan, darling, was to stay dead. It was Redgrin and House's plan. But since I'm just lying here, I did some integrating, some hijacking, some finessing. And now Redgrin doesn't even know that we know the truth about Robin's heart ahead of time. So, to pay him back for being so cagey and dishonest, I think it's only fair to even the odds a little. Wouldn't you agree?
I would. I can get behind that way of thinking.
Good. Then come closer, loves. Let me tell you some things about Redgrin. Two.
Oh, Lord. That was close. I don't know your feelings, big guy. But for me, a fight like that is good for the soul. Oh, wait. Please tell me I didn't drop the... Oh, shit! Well, won't that be a fun extra side quest? I'm such a moron.
Who the hell are you talking to?
Sweet Lord Jesus on a shattered shard of psychopathy. What the hell are you doing here? And how did you get in?
Well, obviously, I changed my name by Akatanian Deedpool to Alice, and was therefore allowed the privilege to voluntarily tumble down your secret rabbit hole.
Hence the mud in your hair.
Hence the mud in my hair. I don't have mud in my hair.
I know you don't, because if you did, you would have entered through the rabbit hole.
Wait a minute, you actually have a rabbit hole?
I do now. Probably only accessible to people called Alice.
I thought your grandma was just using hyperbole.
Well, she probably was, but her newfound connection to House's psychic mainframe mixed with her erratic abilities due to her illness can occasionally turn the mere use of hyperbole into a possible reality. So now, thanks to her use of hyperbole, and enough belief in the idea at least on your part to construct an ice-breaking joke around it, I now have to set aside some time in the near future to search for a possibly bunny-shaped security risk inside my private office.
It'd have to be a big-ass bunny for me to be able to fit down after it.
Big bunnies exist. Everyone knows that.
If your current theory about hyperbole holds true, then I think we're making it worse. I swear, I just saw a fluffy white tail.
Good point. Let's change the subject.
Let's.
You're sitting in my chair.
I am indeed.
Going through my things.
That is also true. Yes.
Any particular reason?
Many particular reasons.
Sourced one of the skeleton keys, I suppose. Is that my diary?
One of many, it seems.
You've no idea.
You don't seem particularly bothered or upset.
Perhaps that's because you don't seem particularly flustered or surprised.
Nope.
Just curious. Considering the caveats and implications of immortality, are we?
Maybe on some level.
Interesting answer. I suppose when you have certain eternities to consider the finite, the reactions to some admittedly subjective records of the eternal would be slightly less human than expected.
You're talking crap again, sweetheart.
Sorry.
You're also deflecting.
Not so sorry for that.
Because you know why I'm here.
I always know why you are here.
Creepy.
Truths often can be.
Then why am I here?
You're telling me you don't know?
Stop it.
I'm just asking. You're here for many reasons.
Then tell me. I'm listening.
You're here in House chiefly because you don't want to or can't live anywhere else. You're here because you deserve to be, because those who become an accidental pariah, an innocent possessed, who ends up committing atrocities at the worst times imaginable, deserve a second chance to make good on their mistakes. It's difficult to do that, however, if you die before you're able to make amends. You know all this. What I didn't know was how strong your connection to the unseen would remain after Summerland. It's a mixture that exists in a diluted form when merely possessed, as you had become in the Undermines, but at full conversion, timed unfortunately with your pretty daring escape, that connection is at its strongest. That mixture is at its purest. Typically, human hosts, at least the souls of human hosts, can survive possession if the entity is vanquished in time. Although, even if it is, many hosts can't take the stress it puts on their body, and so they unfortunately, or fortunately, die anyway. At full conversion, a human host has almost no chance of survival, and neither does their soul have any chance of making it to where it was supposed to go. It just burns up. However, if you already have a link to the unseen,
one strong enough to survive even full conversion and the actual destruction of the invading entity itself, that is power that should not be wasted.
So that's it, then. It's all about power.
No, you moron, listen to me. Your soul survived a full Seraphine conversion and found its way to a subjectively righteous sector of a morally ambiguous astral plane. That is extraordinarily rare. So rare that your newfound immortality actually has nothing to do with me. It has nothing to do with anything I did, other than my part in guiding you back here and giving you access to my world, my home, my life. Because I believe in you. And I believe that what happened to you in 2020 wasn't your fault. What happened to Genie wasn't your fault either. An upside to your strong connection is that you no longer need to use things like brute force, lethal or non-lethal, to incapacitate your enemies. Or your friends, for that matter. Unless, of course, you absolutely need to. Your binding with the Seraphim, your time in Summerland, power you cultivated and brought back with you means you've basically gained a couple of lifetimes worth of metaphysical influence beyond the veil, meaning you, as you have been doing, can now infiltrate and influence your enemies instead of engaging them head-on. It worked with Megan, mostly. It worked with the Mistress. And it'll keep working. And if it doesn't, again, you know what to do. If you absolutely have to. Your unique experience of life and death also makes you a great teacher. Better than me. More direct, much less cryptic than I can't help being. It's one of the reasons why I put you in charge of teaching Gray. Hopefully, with your influence, his inevitable stint in the Acatanian military will be a bit less rocky. Hopefully, he'll be less manipulable.
You're serious, aren't you?
You'll have to be more specific. That was a really long paragraph.
About my immortality. You didn't, I don't know, grant it to me?
Immortality, my dear, is very rarely a gift I am capable of bestowing on other beings, despite what you might think.
You've never actually explained how your immortality works compared to mine.
And I hope it's a conversation that we never have to have, darling.
Seriously? Not even a hint? Come on, I'm...
curious, yes I know!
If you attempt to hunt Josie, I will be very upset.
I bet you would be. Fine. Just before, no. In fact, just after Robin knocks on the door, I shall close this conversation with this.
Wait, what do you mean just after Robin?
Hey, Redgren. Jamie. You in there?
As our species differ, so too do our manifestations of our immortalities. Kya-koya. Good to see you, Detective.
You too, I think. You know you look like crap.
Ooh, ouch.
I was gonna say something. He's right, you do. You look like you just come back from having your ass kicked. Are you bleeding? Oh, Jesus.
I am not bleeding, Jesus.
Redgren, stop deflecting. I've never seen you bleed before. Never? I've seen them covered in other people's blood. Never their own. Redgren, where exactly have you been?
Fighting, obviously.
But why are you bleeding?
I do have the ability to bleed, you know. I usually just put up a contextually flexible part of my concentration on not bleeding during conflict to strike fear into the hearts of my opponents.
Which indicates you were in a close enough conflict that you didn't have time to compartmentalize, and that is rare, and I think we should talk about it.
What are you, a detective or a therapist? I'm not more powerful than everything. You know that, right? So, why are you here, detective?
Robin wants to know what you've done to his heart.
Oh lord, it seems someone's been skipping ahead.
How do you think I got in here?
We just...
I need to know if it's... if it's legitimate. Oof, you could have made that sound better.
Yeah, you really could have. Of course your heart is legit, Robin. Legitimate and extraordinarily brave.
Be serious. They are being serious.
She's right, I am. But I am aware that you're not actually referring to its primary physical ability or emotional validity. despite their merits in themselves. No, you're both referring to the other thing.
Yes, the other thing.
There are certain parameters in which it could be viable.
Yes.
Holy shit. Language detective. There are children present.
What are you talking about?
God damn it! It seems collective patience is wearing thin. Ah, Grayson, Hunter, Johnny, and Lana. Right on time. Do come in. And take a seat.
Right on time for what?
The briefing, Johnny boy. Though I have had to make a few last-minute alterations. Look, I know all of you have so many questions, and I can't answer all of them. There is someone here, however, who can.
Gigi?
Yeah, Gray, that's right. But she's unstable. A sickness inside her, causing her to fade. It's not something that I can cure, not immediately, and definitely not without her at least fighting strength. Once everything is in place, Gigi can do the rest.
How do we help her?
With gusto, Hunter, my dear. With gusto.
20 minutes later.
That's the plan. That's a terrible plan.
They're talking at the same time again.
Yeah, what's up with that?
Long story.
Stop it. You stop. Oh, bloody hell. Kinko terin kiz et fani esh pat kurz ni lo. Right, Johnny, say the first thing that comes into your mind.
I think your office looks like a dance studio for intellectual heroin addicts with bookworms in their ears. Wow.
Yeah, Daddy, that was weird.
She speaks. How is Lana doing?
I guess I'm okay. A little confused.
That's pretty fair. You holding up okay after what happened back at home? It won't come back to her right away. She'll need a little time. Have you slept much since it happened?
Not that I can remember. It's all been a bit scary lately.
That's what I thought.
Please not Deburia.
What the hell did you just do?
On one level, I'm right along with you, Johnny boy. Due to the fact that she was finally starting to speak. On the other hand,
she's exhausted.
Exactly, detective. Look at her. She nearly brought down one of the biggest towns on Earth, and then had to process the existence of interdimensional time travel.
Plus, House's nerve center tends to do a number on you the first time you cross the threshold. I remember nearly throwing up. It's no wonder she's not said much since she's arrived. I was getting kind of worried.
Then worry no more. She'll be okay. I'm sure there's a bed around here somewhere if you need to put her down.
No, it's okay for now. The last time I held her, she was two. You know, dinner party over at Theo and Lacey's. I was the only sober one, or one of the few, and so there I am, realizing when Lacey gave her to me that it was only the second time I had actually held my baby girl. First time was a week after she was born. Even that was only for a few minutes, the best few minutes I ever spent. Then the second time she was crying because her damn stepdad was up drunk dancing on the table, riling all the guests up in the wrong kind of way. As predicted, the idiot fell off the table and sprained his wrist, which became the new life of the party. He was furious that he had injured his punching arm, and so he went around asking the guests, one at a time, if he could punch them in the face with his good hand. Then, when somebody who was just as drunk as Theo was decided to take him up on his offer, Theo had a mean left hook anyway, so he, of course, punches the guy too hard. The guy retaliates, which means it's on me to go and break it up. But in order to do that, I have to give Lana back to Lacey. I remember seeing a look of fear in Lana's, and a look of wavering defiance in Lacey's. And thanks to the fight that night, Theo and Lacey stopped hosting parties, because Theo had scared off too many of the neighbors, after threatening to arrest most of them. Meaning that there was less chance of you getting to see her. Exactly.
After that night, I began to worry that I'd never get to hold her again, ever. I couldn't think of any false pretenses that were satisfying enough not to look suspicious. I mean, goddammit, Theo was my partner. I worked side by side with the guy. And he was always giving me the eyeball.
Because you're a good cop, and he's not, right?
I guess that's one way of putting it, Hunter. Yeah. And, I don't know, I guess I never thought that the next time I would hold my daughter, if there was one, it would be in a world where her mother is dead, and her stepfather, my partner, is also dead. And then I learned that she's different, special, gifted.
Good words. Good father.
Oh, I'm not so sure. I'm sorry, who are you again?
This is Grayson Wolf. Or rather, Grayson as he used to be. Again.
That sounds confusing.
In a nutshell, my present self is trapped in an unknown place. Nobody can find me, or my girlfriend, or my uncle's friend.
Who's your uncle?
They are.
Honorary.
Redgren's your uncle?
Honorary.
It's also impossible for Scottish people to say that word properly, so we just stick with uncle.
Can't argue with that. I'm sorry, I cut you off. You were talking about being trapped somewhere. In the present. And not to cut you off again, but aren't you in the present right now?
Only from the perspective that I had, or have, when I was 9. I'm 9. It's complicated. I don't think we have time to go into all...
No, I really don't think we do. Tis a saga now.
The extra confusing detail is the fact that a few hours before I was displaced, I was shown a few variations of my possible futures, which is something that is always supposed to happen anyway. I've done it at least...
Enough times.
What they said. Making life predictable at all the wrong times. It's weird.
And we're working on that.
What's gusto? Sorry to interrupt, I've just been wanting to ask that question for a while now.
It means to do something with enjoyment and or enthusiasm.
Yes, indeed, Miss Mortimer. The exact opposite manner in which you uttered those words.
Well, like Johnny and I both said, it's a terrible plan. You're basically just guessing. And if you're actually considering sending Hunter and Grayson off without any backup, then you're stupider than I thought.
Don't blame my uncle. And don't patronize me. Or Hunter, for that matter, detective.
Great. I didn't mean...
I'll go with you.
Jamie and Hunter can pair up. You and I have a lot to talk about.
And at this point, I suppose that will be suitably bizarre.
Shut up.
Got it.
Wait. So that means I'm now going to a creepy lair in a weird canyon sewer to retrieve a hat that you apparently sold to a lizard because he threatened to bite your legs off, and now Robin's slipping off to the loom of fate to weave himself some new threads?
Nice.
Hunter and I could take that thing easily.
Goddamn right.
Hence Redgren's original suggestion. Either that, or they're just hoping we get eaten to make things less complicated.
I see where you're coming from, but in the long run, it would actually make things far more complex.
And, of course, we don't want any of our expedition to get eaten by intelligent reptiles. Or anything else, for that matter. That should be the first reason.
What Jamie said.
Are you saying this hat will help your grandmother?
It sounds strange, but yes. It helps beings keep their mind in order, which my grandmother is going to need. Gray and Robin, you two do what you need to do with the loom. Watch out for nuns. And Johnny and Lana are with me. We're going sky hiking.
In that case, we're all gonna need to rest a little?
Not a bad idea, Johnny boy. Miss Mortimer can show you all where your rooms are. If I were you, I'd steer clear of the medical bay until after we return. House will also provide you with anything you need.
Thank you. You've been very kind to me.
No, I haven't.
I disagree. I'm holding proof right here.
Don't thank me yet. We still have a long way to go. Three. There was a strange, restful silence that endured over the following hours as the company slept. Slept soundly and deeply. All but one. It was a silence that made me uncomfortable, one that caused me to rise from my chambers and stalk the halls of the medical bay, the long way around, both on the ground and above, attempting to ignore the doubt swimming inside me, like rotting seaweed. Everything in the medical bay was mostly automated by House herself, a better way to avoid any transmutations. Cross-contaminations, even those of the abstract and theoretical, can spread just as fast and be just as, if not more, deadly than any terminal disease suffered by the human body. Nobody wants the kind of infection you have to theorize your way out of. Humans are truly amazing creatures in the many forms that they take. I have always held a jealousy, for example, towards their inherent selective perception. Their brains have a way of somehow filtering out the unknowable, the unfathomable. The skill of specifically human or human-like perception is one of consistently holding the value of what is there over the precise nature of what is there. It's a skill, listeners. It is one of survival. I suppose I find that particular attribute to be most present among those that live and travel with me. Perhaps that is the ultimate common denominator. Anthropomorphic personifications have the ability to take many shapes and forms, go by many names, and tend to possess varying subjectively wondrous abilities and titles over lifespans unknown, ones perhaps more digestible to certain species or perhaps other personifications in turn. We can take shapes that we believe will be more palatable, and our perspectives are often flawed. But the beauty of humanity is that they do half the work for us, 99% of the time, without even knowing it. The issue, however, is that our brain chemistry has trouble activating within our own perceptual parameters that same survival skill that a large number of humanoids throughout the cosmos seem to possess oh so passively. It is even more difficult for us to do so where family are concerned. Listeners, how well do you know the person who raised you? That question still applies even if, or rather especially if, you have had to raise yourself. Deeply plagued and troubled as I was when I was young, learning the ropes that I still had yet to create, I always looked to my elders, linked either by bloodline or experience, in periods of strife and confusion. To be a disillusioned personification hoping to soon take any recognizable form, the chaos that brews can have a ripple effect on the very cosmos you are attempting to aid to prosper in its infancy. Therefore, staying ultimately balanced became my original purpose. A purpose delineated to me by my grandmother. The one who taught me how to smile. The one who would make shapes with her hands to show me what it might be like to have arms. What it might be like to use those arms to, like her, create shimmering shapes of shadow and light to make other things laugh and cry. Presently in the medbay, I couldn't turn around. If I turned around and looked at her from the viewing gallery, even through the Victra glass, both of us would break. And so, instead, in the rising light, we chose a particularly bright wall situated in the gallery itself and used our hands to tell stories of shadow. I told her the story of the quest I had yet to embark on, and she told me how it would end. Recently, when slowly ascending from the undercity of Grenkara, in the company of Robin and Jamie, we had been close enough to the split point generated by the Tailfire beacon, close enough to Gigi's point of origin for her to maintain her ability to change her appearance to one that pleased the newfound her. But the newfound her wasn't supposed to exist. Someone had seen to that, had abused that, had ultimately found a way to synthesize elements of her nature for future use, in the most literal sense of the phrase. Somehow, Galen turned cosmological theory into fact with a despicable act of ritual sacrifice, breaking the cosmic clock. Among other things, it is my job to repair the damage done, even though I know that's not fully possible. And the sadder fact of needing her alive to help me fix a problem she unwittingly created by dying means she is forced to suffer in this way. Strands of her have been pulled and copied like binary code, and pasted and wrapped around the throat of time itself, choking it, disorientating it, so much so that Gigi can't even function properly in a place that exists within its own self-contained time zone, such as the one that House perpetuates. This time zone being fractured as such, in an orderly fashion, is one of the few things keeping Gigi alive, or relatively stable, even as her condition worsens. House would do her best, but there was no guarantee. Back in LA, Robin asked me why I hadn't been to see Gigi since she came back. Since we brought her back. Well, listeners, now you know. Upon the commencement of my return journey to my chambers, I crossed paths with Robin, who was perhaps on his way to check on my grandmother. Perhaps it was due to my distracted state of mind, but I found myself being particularly cold towards him, at least at the beginning. It wasn't because his first words came in the form of a sarcastic comment pertaining to the tardiness of my presence at my sick grandmother's bedside, for I did not expect him to yet know or understand how I perceive my family. It wasn't even because the detective had developed what I considered to be an unhealthy interest in her. Or was it she in him? It was perhaps because he surprised me. I didn't see or even sense him coming. He hadn't even broken the silence that had fallen over House's chambers. Perhaps that was what had triggered my insomnia. Knowing what I now knew about Lana, Robin's mother, I was no longer surprised at the Marek's passive ability to selectively hide their movements from beings such as myself, but it made it no less annoying. Robin had, of course, been vocal during the briefing, for various reasons, but there was one point of contention that he did not refer to, that again surprised me. This point, however, ended up being examined in the ensuing conversation. Before you go, there's something I want to ask you. Isn't there always, Detective? Why are you putting the kids' lives in danger? I checked out the space-time coordinates, you know. We're being split across various Aquitanian regions, thankfully, all stemming from the same time drop point. But still, he paused, breathing deeply. You're telling me that if I hadn't said anything, you would have just sent Grayson and Hunter... No, in fact, let's just stick with Hunter for a moment. Into a nest of killer reptiles. Yes, I said, lighting an implement of the smokable variety. There was a breeze passing through the sandstone passageway in which we stood, kicking up aged dust that lazily circled at our lower quarters. A silence had formed between myself and the detective for the duration of the wind's contribution to the conversation, and was broken by Robin's interestingly calm reply. You want to explain to me how that works? Hunter is, what, 10 years old? And unlike Grayson, he has no superhuman abilities, no clairvoyance, no metaphysical training of any kind that we're aware of. Johnny told me that the kid gave him a good run through the city streets, and sure, was much calmer than I've seen most kids in a self-contained war zone, considering he just lost his dad to an Uber vamp. But that doesn't mean he's a soldier. And neither is my mother, nor do I really appreciate you taking my grandfather, given that he's only just beginning to process the chaos of the war that he was a part of. And now he's a sudden single parent of a child that has a lot of her own growing and processing to do. Firstly, Detective, when Grayson says something like, we can take that thing, that's not mere overconfidence. That is near certainty. And it's not because of Gray's strength, although it is a factor if things do become unpredictable. It is because of his mind. It is, for now, perhaps, a blessing that I am currently unable to achieve a stable enough connection with a drop point no further back than after Grayson's encounter with the Beholder. Reliving that more than once is enough for Grayson to follow the correct path, especially in the immediate future, even if, this time around, he's doing something different. What does this have to do with Hunter's well-being? Hunter's well-being is exactly the point. Grayson didn't raise a single concern about it. And you trust that? I do. You trust that if he foresaw Hunter being killed or even injured, he would mention it. Yes.
and you're sure that all of the stuff that you've changed this time around, his extra metaphysical training with Jamie, all of the new people that have been displaced and are interacting differently, not all the same as last time, right? Like, all these people that you've brought in, you've never done it this way before, have you?
You're trying to think like me, Detective. You're attempting to get your head around my time stream. Don't. It's a bad idea.
I'm just trying to understand.
I know you are, and you're not doing too badly. In regards to Hunter, I suppose that I would ask you to give the kid a little more credit, then to perhaps consider the nature of the mission itself, one of quiet infiltration, something which smaller beings are better at. Gryson and Hunter are no exception. I would add that it is also no good for someone like Hunter to be left alone, partly because he's seen behind the curtain now, so to speak, and he's lost the only family member he had left in terrible circumstances. And if I left him there, a 10-year-old African-American in Los Angeles in 1955 with no family, well, I'm sure your grandfather could paint a clear picture of his possible future without my help. You follow me? Yeah. Yeah. The detective's words were quiet, meditative. It's not ideal that Hunter is only 10 years old, and honestly, it's not ideal that Gryson is 9, although he's a giant compared to most others. You know as well as I do he's technically supposed to be over a century old. None of this is supposed to be happening in this way, at all. The Dark Pale Death wasn't supposed to happen to you, to any of you in 2017, and so therefore, neither was what happened to Jamie 3 years later. History is broken, Detective. We're all living at the wrong points in time. Galen and his followers abused time, snapped it, and then forced it to heal wrong so that it can't be changed without immense effort. I see an admittedly fading memory in my head of an entire different set of events, an entirely different history and therefore future that I was once a part of. That my grandmother was once a part of, and now Galen has fixed everything into a specific state of flux, and so all I can do is go further back and make small changes so that this broken present is no longer constant. You have said, and so have many others whose existence you aren't even aware of, that I am the one breaking history due to these minor changes, and I suppose they're right. I am. But unlike Galen, Detective, I know how to break things properly, and I do not have to murder people to do it. I can make minor alterations in the long-term interest of cultivation that will, when they all come to fruition, have as much positive effect on history as the Dark Pale Crisis had on the negative side. And you were meant, Detective, to be far more surprised at how important your role is in my entire plan, but given Gigi's interest in you and Miss Mortimer's annoyingly covert examination of your heart, I would imagine you have already put the pieces together.
I think so.
And so you understand that now, more than ever, time is of the essence.
Yes.
Which is the main reason why leaving the kids here is a bad idea. We need all hands on deck if this is going to work. We need Gigi, or your part in the grander plan won't matter one bit. Another reason why I kept you in the dark.
You know, you could have done it in a nicer way.
No, I couldn't.
I guess you couldn't.
And then there's the first of two curveballs to consider. Thrown, to be fair, mostly unwittingly, by members of the crew themselves. And that is Shayera. I'm guessing Jamie told you.
She did. Before I left for LA.
Did she share the information willingly? Or did you have to winkle it out with your winkle pickers?
She told me when we went for those drinks. Just before you promptly disappeared to Varia, was it?
Indeed it was. The fact that she told you means she trusts you, which is a good thing, but it's also the reason why we can't just leave certain crew members in-house unsupervised. A lot of her power is being diverted into keeping Gigi alive, which means security is more lax than would be appropriate for beings who can somehow punch their way into the mirror dimensions. It's not something I brought up in the briefing because, in truth, I didn't want to scare those that weren't in the know. Detective, even after everything I've said to you,
In the most ideal world that it is possible for us to currently construct, I would love to spend the next few years training the kids up in safe surroundings and allowing them the choice to fight or to abstain or to return in whatever way they choose. But the world we live in is far less than ideal and more unfair than even I know it could be. Or should be. In truth, everything was already fucked before Shaira came back. We were already busy, Detective, and now we're busier. Having the responsibility of making an already bad situation worse in order to make it better is a difficult task, whatever the case. But when it's on a universal scale, you really, really have to do the best you can with what you have. And what I have is you guys. Do you follow me? I do. And will you follow me? There was a pause while the detective considered the meaning of this new question. His eyes had changed as he listened to me explain things, and there was an understanding in them that I had to admit I had never seen before. I will. Thank you, Detective. Now, check on Gigi and get some rest. You're gonna need it. Robin nodded, then said, You really don't know how Shaira made it back, or where she's getting her power from? I really dunno, and I hate not knowing. It's becoming an uncomfortable theme. I turned to go, now sure that I would at least get some rest, as this conversation had exhausted me more than I was expecting. The detective did not stop me, but his echoing words followed me down the passageway.
You said there were two curveballs thrown by the crew.
Yes.
One was Jamie's, I get that, but what was the other one?
Oh, the other one? That was yours.
Wait, mine?
Your suggestion that we switch up the teams. This entire conversation's original point of contention was based on something that you yourself managed to prevent regardless. Thanks to your input, Jamie is now going to the region of Saprika to help Hunter retrieve the Righteous Hat, and you are now accompanying Gryson to the Kir Nakaran to pay a visit to the Loom of Fate, instead of Jamie, which means you'll be the one with the semi-accurate clairvoyance advantage, instead of Hunter, making his future far, far more uncertain. Jamie's predictions tend to come to her in dreams. As opposed to in the moment, and so unless you knock her out first, and then wake her up and ask, she won't necessarily be of as much help as Gray would be on that front. If it's the kid's safety you're worried about, anyway. She will, of course, if necessary, defend him as if her life depended on it, which, ironically, it doesn't. Hunter's does, though.
Then why didn't you say anything? Why didn't you, I don't know, overrule me?
One, because then I would have had to explain all of this, and two, because Gryson changed his mind.
Yeah, because he felt patronized by what I said.
Possibly. However, it may have been a contributing factor, or rather a catalyst, to a better future for all of us. Maybe you'll need him more than Hunter will. Maybe I was wrong in the first place. But regardless, he changed his mind. And I think that's significant. Another reason I didn't overrule either of you by sharing any of this information. Though my back was turned, I could hear the telltale Marek sound of Robin running his hands through his slick back hair. His mind was clearly turning to soup.
My God. I told you, stop trying to think like me. The headaches won't stop. Robin sighed. Fair. I'll stop now. Attaboy. I'll call you all to the nerve center in a few hours. Need to make sure that everyone is properly dressed.
Thank you, Redgren. For explaining, for... Robin hesitated. Well, thank you for everything. Another gust of wind began to billow down the passageway, and considering that the process of taking to the air without the assistance of the elements tended to always be the most strenuous part of the process when beings such as myself are fatigued, I decided to use it as an uplift. The first to take to the air, and the second to blast me up in the direction of the vertical passageway, in one of the many directions of my chambers. I was lucky, it seemed, that my final words of the night to the detective managed to fit into the small window of time that sat between the two gusts of wind. I said this to your grandfather while he was holding your mother, and I will also say it to you. Don't thank me yet.
Four. Acatania, North Side Central Outskirts,
Cycle 17.4412185. Welcome, my darlings, to Aquitania Cycle 17. Or, if you prefer your native conversion, Aquitania in the year 1888.
1888, Jamie said. Looks the same to me.
The company regarded the pulsating, glowing clouds above our heads, igniting on the northern winds. Ionic sparks rained down and dissipated on the air. A thunderous clap so loud that it made certain members of the company jump and wince. Hunter covered Lana's ears while she nuzzled into her newfound father's side. I craned my neck as I giggled, breathing in the thick, rich atmosphere. Coolna, I said, speaking low but amplifying the whisper, addressing the sky in my native tongue. Kikon renon fosure, dupese dio etebre. Who are they talking to? Robin asked, nudging Jamie's shoulder. No idea, Jamie said, vapidly, giving him a more exaggerated nudge in return.
They're talking to the planet, to Aquitania, Gryson said, gently pushing in between Jamie and Robin.
Gray gripped Jamie's arm and gave it a gentle squeeze as he made his way past. All Robin received was Gray's shoulder.
I remember playing on this beach once.
You've been here before? Robin asked before he could stop himself. Gryson, who was previously focusing his eyes in the direction in which my incantations were being directed on the wind, turned his head to glower at Robin. The detective then once again noticed the constantly morphing hue in Gryson's eyes, still not being able to comprehend the pattern within, if there was a pattern. The boy craned his neck and slightly stuck out his tongue. It was almost black. Oh yeah, Robin said, recalling Gray's medical file. The detective moved forward a few steps, drawing level with Gryson. In the corner of his eye, Robin could see Johnny, Lana, and Hunter standing together, huddling against the wind.
What's it your uncle always says?
Robin asked, following Gray's gaze and resting on me.
For the first time. Again.
Gray whispered. His words at that moment seemed to be stolen away by the gale force response to my native expatiations of apology.
That's the one,
Robin said, taking in a deep breath, then lowering his voice even more. Do you know what they're saying right now?
They're apologizing. The long way round.
For what?
Probably for what we're about to do.
Me and you?
All of us,
Gryson said, with an ominous tone that Robin really did not like. Gray adjusted his attire, liberated from one of House's meanwhile chambers. Lana and Hunter received no such privilege, and this caused a little bit of an argument. Although, once I gave the three most technologically and metaphysically inexperienced members of our crew a brief crash course in the workings of wearable nanotechnology, requesting Hunter to join me for a demonstration, the fact that Gryson decided to actively opt out of the higher tech solution to them seemed strange and kind of idiotic. Gryson had merely smirked at these comments, no doubt taking into account their century of origin. Why wouldn't three people who weren't even supposed to know, let alone have the opportunity to set their eyes on this kind of technology for at least another 50 years, not think that Gryson was strange for settling for light, terulium-dipped tri-weave armor plates? The protection value was much lower, and noticing this, Johnny expressed further concern. However, once Gryson had explained the benefits of thinly forged terulium and briefly further outlined its mystical properties, before adding surreptitiously that it was the only thing in his quarters that his present self still stored in House's time zone that actually fitted him, given that it was the first uniform initially provided to him by the Aquitanian military, the three displaced residents of the City of Angels were promptly guided into confused, contemplative silence. Gryson's memory and foresight astounded me no end, considering that in this, or rather in Gryson's new version of events, I hadn't yet actually passed on that uniform. This time he had found it on his own, because he still has memories of the last time I tried to save his father, and no doubt memories of all the adventures we embarked upon together thereafter. House's independent time zone contained all of these varying and repeating events within a nexus of simultaneity, one that Gryson seemed to be able to integrate with perfectly. And why shouldn't he?
given that he had done it so many times before. I wasn't altogether sure if this was due to his own inherent memory retention of multiple time streams, or because of his time with the Beholder, or a mixture of both. Regardless, though astounded, I was worried about him. In my present, as I brought my communion with the homeworld to a close, I could feel Gray's shifting gaze on the back of my dampening neck. I was on my knees, the weight of my concerns and responsibilities almost sinking me into the sand. I used my hands to support my ascent, rising as the tide did the same, and stepping back from the spot on which I had knelt, the shimmering water filling the impressions I had left, attempting and failing to wash them away.
"Gather round, explorers," I said, my voice low. Everyone stepped closer. "We find ourselves in what I suppose you could call Actania's Age of Expansion. Northside Central is on the eve of opening negotiations with neighboring planets. Certain pushy members of the High Council have won the vote to begin sharing the technology developed by the Actanian scientists to harness the energy of their entire star system. Something that Actania had already been doing for centuries, but the technology was always kept under wraps so as not to advance the neighboring star systems too quickly, at least the ones who were aware of Actania's existence. Anyway, I digress. The Elite Guard and the Lupine Crown, natives of this planet, are not at each other's throats in this century."
"Isn't that a good thing?" Jamie queried.
"As sad as this is to say, my loves, it's actually easier for our particular purposes anyway when they are at war. When they're at war, they're all spread a little thinner. Some of you here already know that the Elite Guard protect the fledgling cities of this planet, while the Lupine Crown protect the wildlands on the ground. As for the outer wildlands..."
"They mean space,"
Gryson said, nudging Hunter.
"Yes, I mean space. The final frontier. Everyone other than me turned to look at Jamie.
"What?" she exclaimed.
"It is.
Mostly. Except there are more than one of us here who have a few years more to live before they'll understand that reference. Within their own century, anyway," I said, smiling out of view. "Oh, my bad," Jamie said, regarding three blank faces in her peripheries. "You'll get there eventually."
"Do shut up, dear. As I was saying, the Outer Wildlands are a destiny still yet to be fulfilled by the Lupine Crown. Cycle 17 is still the construction phase, meaning that the skies will be far clearer of aerial patrols. In fact, outside of Northside Central, they will be near enough non-existent."
"I like the sound of that," Johnny said.
"So do I,"
Lana said. I began to cast a perspective spell to better illustrate the planet landscape. "You should be able to see all of the regions we'll be hitting from here. Jamie and Hunter, you two are heading southeast towards the canyon township of Saprika. You know what you're looking for. Do not wake the lizards."
"We won't,"
Hunter said, apparently perturbed by the question.
"Quick and quiet," Jamie said.
"That's what I like to hear. Detective Gryson, you two are heading southwest of here, where you will find the temple of Kia Nakadan. You two know the ropes, and I'm counting on you to deliver the threats."
"Oh, we shall deliver,"
Gryson trilled.
"What he said," Robin muttered. "And what about us three?" Johnny asked.
"We, Johnny boy, are going up there." I shifted perspective to the twisted icy stone giants of the mountains of the Ice Forge, to the peak of the smoking mountains of Varia. "You've got to be kidding me." "I'm definitely, definitely not."
"We don't have to walk, do we?"
Lon asked. "Well, these four lazy bones are going through portals since we're short on time, and the regions are spread quite far apart. This beach, Yab-Sipina, is ground zero, our safe zone, our meeting point. When each of our tasks are completed or something goes wrong, which it won't, because we're brilliant. However, if anyone does get into trouble, all recently, or not so recently installed psychic links will remain connected to House's mainframe and will remain active. Even if you die. But you won't die. What I'm getting at, Lana, my dear, is that Varia has this way of confusing the portals I am capable of constructing, meaning that the lazy option isn't necessarily open to us at this time."
"So does that mean we do have to walk, then?"
Were you even paying attention during my lecture on sentient nanotechnology? That one's on me. Why walk when you can fly?
Where's your nanosuit, then?
Lana asked. Haven't you heard, Lana dear? Never needed one. Five. Saprika, Acatania. Cycle 17.441218.6.2. A tendril-tangled crescent canyon of ancient glowing rock. A deepening chasm cut into the face of the southwestern region of Acatania's more habitable hemisphere. Saprika, however, was an often crepuscular sector, overshadowed by charcoal clouds. The region was shared by the peaceful, passive Saprikan natives, humanoids who rested in small settlements along the canyon's cliffside, and a once small, now fledgling group of off-world settlers, intelligent reptilian lifeforms nicknamed the Zorenya by the Saprikan natives, Zorin being the Saprikan translation for the word reptile, and Ya meaning giant. And giant they were, thick-tailed and near dragon-scaled, at least when fully grown. Their tough scales arrive with maturity and act primarily as protection from the predators and destructive elements of their homeworld, one now lost to gluttony. Their young are often hatched and raised in dark, secluded places, and well protected by their elders as they grow. And so it was a little bit of an issue that I happened to have previously accidentally dropped and temporarily misplaced the righteous hat on the inside of one of their countless canyon nests.
Countless? Seriously?
Jamie snapped, emerging with Hunter from the egress overlooking the center point of the canyon's crescent scar.
Come on. Have you seen the size of that bloody canyon?
I protested, putting a finger to my ear, having made a choice of secondary communication through midwave nanotech, as opposed to psychic energy, given that we would all need to direct that more appropriately.
I have now,
Jamie shouted, a loud voice echoing across the mighty chasm. Without the aid of the unseen.
Hunter should have the target's last known position on his visual interface. All the nanosuits are linked to House's mainframe. Sending the command through now.
Whoa! Hunter exclaimed.
Waypoint marked. Now move.
I growled, signing off.
It's this way. We need to get down there.
To the bottom of the canyon.
Oy. The descent towards the nest contained moments of clumsiness and moments of grace. Jamie had to admit that Hunter did have a natural form when flying, or even falling through the air. Jamie supposed he just needed another lesson in power redirection. He ended up stalling his lower thrusters in his attempt to impersonate a rocket on blastoff, and began descending. Though with style, rather too fast for him to focus on landing safely by other means of impulse, meaning that Jamie's following descent after him was performed in a rather more panicked manner than Jamie had expected. Using the strength of her connection to steady him with her mind wasn't the problem. It was, in fact, remembering to also slow her own descent as she slowed Hunter's. The boy remained hovering a few feet above the canyon floor, breathing slow sighs of relief, the second or third of which Jamie just managed to catch as she hurtled past him, slamming shoulder first into the unforgiving, shimmering rock and cutting a jagged tear into the face of the canyon. Jamie rolled over, regarding Hunter, now hovering under his own power. Her head throbbed, and her shoulder throbbed more.
Ow!
Jamie muttered, understated as ever.
Are you okay?
Ask the rock,
Jamie said, slowly sitting up. She stretched out her shoulder and used the other arm to help stand herself up.
You must have really hard shoulders,
Hunter said, once again on solid ground. He knelt down to examine the dented rock face.
What are you even made of?
Mostly sarcasm. Now let's keep moving. It's likely someone heard our clumsy entrance.
It's this way,
Hunter said eagerly.
Stay low, Jamie instructed, and always check your corners. Are your shields up?
Yep.
Good. Now move slowly.
Move they did. On the faster side of slow, they moved into the slithering, cavernous maze, a vast space of warm, dimly glowing ore, once mined during times of war.
winding and twisting passageways of shimmering silver and green, giving way to other hidden canyons, one whose depth could rival the Crescent Canyon's width. It was darker in some places than others, and despite the surrounding sound of sinister hissing that seemed to be their constant companion, and the occasional reptilian yelp, neither Jamie or Hunter could actually see any of what they were hearing. Speaking internally and privately to me through the psychic link, so that neither the Zorans nor Hunter, who had not yet begun his basic level of psychic training, could hear her, Jamie said, "Why the hell did you use this place as a shortcut when you were coming back from L.A.? I was running away from demonic warrior nuns. If you don't believe me, ask our esteemed colleagues. That I do believe. But why did you go back to L.A.? I forgot something." "What did you forget?" "You'll understand when you, or rather when Hunter sees the hat. You were busy, Jamie. I didn't have time to give you the full story.
Not far now,"
Hunter whispered, snapping Jamie back to most things external. "All right, just stay sharp," Jamie said, as she followed Hunter around another corner. I really would have expected to see more giant... Oh, dear God.
"Okay,"
Hunter said, stepping back.
That's a really, really big problem.
The shores of Kir Nakaran, Aquitania, cycle 17.44121186.3. "I can't believe you cut off her head. We negotiated our way in here, and now we're fighting our way out."
"I think the negotiations started to fall apart when she began strangling you to death."
"I had her exactly where I wanted her."
"Bullshit. You were literally about to die."
"Why decapitation?"
"I was aiming for the arm she was using to murder you dead."
"Bullshit. That was one of the most perfect, calculated backflips I have seen since DC. And you haven't even done that yet."
"Do you have the shroud?"
"Yes, I've got the fucking shroud. You made it far easier for me to steal, since the previous owner quickly became headless."
"If you just said what I told you to say, in the way I told you to say it, she wouldn't have started strangling you in the first place."
"What did I say wrong?" "Jesus! Grayson, what was that? Yeah, sounded like an earthquake."
"I can't even quantify how many dialect lectures my uncle is gonna make you listen to."
"What was that noise? God, shit! Goddamn spider monkeys! God... Doc? Doc, they're gaining on me."
"You know you're gonna have to jump out the window, right?"
"What? Where are you?"
"Never you mind where I am. I can see you, and in 300 yards, your only exit is to your left. If you turn right, you'll be overrun. And given the nature of the intersection where we got separated, I'm guessing that even you can work out that it's not on the ground floor. In 3, 2, 1, turn left. You see what I mean?"
"Oh, God damn it." That should hold them for a little while.
"Ugh. You couldn't have at least broken my fall."
"I did. Why do you think your legs are still working?"
"Good point."
"It was a dual-purpose spell. Jamie's thing. Get up, detective. They're coming."
"Jeez, what the hell did you do to their courtyard?"
"I blew it up."
"With what?"
"With gusto."
"So, we cut off their leader's head, stole her shroud, and collapsed in their entranceway."
"They're gonna be angry, right?"
"I think it's fair to say they're gonna be angry, yeah."
"How long do we have?" "Less than a minute. The protections Jamie taught me are good, but they only tend to work as temporary stopgaps, so... we're gonna have to fight them."
"All of them?"
"We draw them away from each other. You do long range, I'll do short. Unless you fancy jumping."
"I can't fly, remember?"
"Can't you,
I don't know, just portal us out of here?"
"My point-to-point dialect is a little rusty."
"How convenient."
"Well, excuse me for not wanting to accidentally consign you to Oblivion, detective. Anyway, if I wanted to do that, I would do it with intention."
"Then what do you suggest, Mr. Foresight?"
"We use the wreckage as cover. They can only pour out from one exit, unless they come up from the catacombs."
"The way we came in? It's a long way down."
"Exactly. There were more guards down there."
"You're sure you can handle this?"
"How hard can it be?"
Varia's third peak. Acatania. Cycle 17.44121862.2.
There is always a catch, isn't there?
I'm not sure I take your meaning, Johnny boy. Didn't you enjoy your journey?
If I'd known we'd end up a few hundred yards away from that thing, I'd have stayed on the goddamn beach.
Is it a dragon?
Nothing so grandiose. Looks pretty grandiose to me.
Well, it would it not? Given that neither of you have actually set your eyes on a dragon before.
Then what is it?
A guardian. A keeper of the secrets of the mountain. Some used to call them, well, the basic translation would be cryo-drakes. Big, beautiful creatures.
If a little grouchy, diamond-hard skin, which is heavy and often slows them down, talons as sharp as Spartan spears, dense and thick enough to support the weight of a small skyscraper. In terms of deadliness, these claws are rivaled only by their...
Holy Christ!
By their armored tails.
It looks like a scorpion's tail.
I suppose that wouldn't be the most inaccurate comparison. Oh yeah, and they burn cold.
Things can burn cold?
Sentient elements can often strike the strangest of bargains. How do we get past it? The chamber in which our target is housed lies just beyond this creature. That's where you two are going. You can use your suit's camouflage. Once you get beyond the gap in the peak, your path should be clear.
And what about you?
I'm going to keep our new friend... distracted.
No way.
Way. You can't go toe-to-toe with that thing. It's massive. Not forever, no. But it should be long enough for you two to retrieve the target. It'll take teamwork to remove it. I suspect the mountain, and therefore the chamber, won't react too well to being robbed. So don't stick around. Got it? Just don't get killed. You're our ride home, remember? I'll try to keep that in mind. It seemed to take just under 20 minutes from that point, listeners, for everything to go sideways separately and therefore collectively. In ascending order of life-threatening urgency, we have our lovely pair in downtown Saprika, working as a team in an attempt to quietly navigate through the center of a nest crawling with Zarenya. Miss Mortimer was uttering an internal incantation to keep the inhabitants asleep, while Hunter used his suit's camouflage and inherent size to maneuver his way around the differing reptilian gatherings. It was taking a while, but luckily seemed to be going well, until their luck ran out. Jamie had expected her incantation's proximity to be the issue, given that she could only keep a certain number of Zarenya unconscious at any one time, but it was, in fact, due to a little too much excitement on Hunter's part. Jamie would later reflect that if I had just been honest with Hunter instead of shrouding everything in unnecessary mystery, or if Jamie had pushed a little more for her questions to be answered, perhaps what had occurred wouldn't have occurred at all. Hunter's exclamation of confused joy shocked them both, and until setting her own eyes on the object Hunter was clutching moments later, Jamie hadn't known the reason for it. The sound Hunter made also, of course, came as a shock to the cave's residents, who were instantly ready to give chase and do battle. As a result, Jamie had to use her quickening thoughts to quickly yank Hunter away from giant, swiping reptilian claws, pull him towards her as she turned, and taking to the air under the power of the unseen as he landed on her back.
Whoa! That was cool,
Hunter said. It only worked because you were facing the right way in the first place. Could have gone south real quick. Navigating the narrow, shimmering caverns was no easy task at speed, even with her companion firing non-lethal stun bolts behind to slow the increasingly advancing Zarenya.
Do they want what we came for? Or are they just pissed?
Hunter asked, between shots.
I'm pretty sure they just want to eat us. Yeah. How's it going back there?
There's a lot more of them.
Come on, there can't be that many. Oh my god.
Yeah, I think we woke up the other nests. These guys really, really don't like trespassers. There's the entrance where we came in, Hunter shouted, now having to contend with more Zarenia joining the chase ahead of their position on both sides.
I see it,
Jamie said. Hold on. Do you see that? What are they doing?
They're hoarding up to block the canyon entrance. We need to move faster.
Okay. Hold on.
Hurry it up, sweet pea. We're about to die.
Repositioning the angle of his lower legs and feet and squaring his shoulders into place, Hunter prepared himself and tapped Jamie's shoulder.
Ready.
And...
Go! Go! Go!
Shields up. Activating afterburners.
They almost didn't make it. A second longer, and they would have been trapped. Half a second, even. And so, the elation of not being eaten alive, and then the horror of realizing they were still being pursued, this time by a winged derivative, undoubtedly sourced from a neighboring nest, meant that the duo's flight path became somewhat altered by necessity. Realizing that they couldn't lead an entire colony of Zarenia back in the northeasterly direction of Yapsipina, they altered their course northwest, taking turns in knocking their pursuers off balance. This worked for a further few miles, until Hunter's afterburners began to malfunction again. This, of course, slowed their top speed, allowing the remaining 15 or more Zarenia to close the gap. They began to lose altitude when one of the hissing pursuers grabbed Hunter's arm from above and started pulling at him, forcing Jamie to angle her path to act as a counterweight while Hunter struggled. The sensation was so distracting and so detrimental to Jamie's flight pattern that by the time Hunter managed to dislodge himself from the Zarenia's grip, a maneuver which also caused him to unintentionally reactivate his previously malfunctioning afterburners, there was absolutely no stopping their new trajectory as they hurtled towards the smoking, partially ruined temple of Kia Nakaran.
How hard can it be, you said. We can take him, you said. Okay, so I may have underestimated their numbers a little.
May have?
A little?
Forever understated.
Well, it's much better than your panicked sarcasm.
I am not panicking. I am merely pointing out that we've managed to let them back us into a corner and maybe about to die.
For the record, I only abandoned my position because you started screaming for help.
I was not screaming for help. I was requesting assistance.
By screaming for help?
You're a dick. You know that, right?
Nope. A dick move would have been to let you die while screaming for help.
You know, if we get out of this, I'm so gonna kick your ass.
Then let that be the last thought in your head before they cut it off.
That would indeed have been the last thought in Robin Marek's head, if it hadn't been followed by a dense, palpable sense of fear and failure. Robin could have sworn that Gryson had been beside him mere seconds earlier, and yet when Robin returned his gaze, he found that the gap between them had widened considerably. Gryson's blade was on the floor. Perhaps it had been the sound of it hitting the ground that had forced the detective to return his gaze. The boy was standing stock still. A rusted blade was at his throat, held by hands that were far too steady, considering the decomposition. Only one of the armored warriors had hold of Gryson. It was the other surrounding 20 that presented a bigger problem. "Don't hurt him," Robin heard himself say, subconsciously registering another sound in the near distance, though he kept it out of his eyes.
Drop your weapon, thief.
This command came from the one holding Gryson. You got it. Putting it down.
A wise decision. Had you attempted anything, I would have taken great pleasure.
In what? Murdering a 9-year-old boy before my eyes? Yeah, I'm getting that.
This is no ordinary boy.
I'm getting that too.
Surely you realize how valuable he is, right? It
would be a waste to kill him. Just think how much leverage you'd have over the High Council with him in your custody.
Robin, what are you doing?
Silence. A displaced leader of a future Akatanian military faction could indeed be useful to us.
You'd certainly be value enough to rebuild your courtyard.
You're such a dick,
Gryson said, struggling slightly. One of the surrounding warriors punched him square in the jaw. ceasing his motion. As Gray's head swiveled back, he noticed something. Robin noticed him notice. He had noticed too, but forced himself to hold back until the opportune moment. As Robin spoke his final words, addressing them to the one holding Grayson, he covertly retrieved a hidden object from the rear of his belt. "It is possible, however," Robin said, priming the hidden device, "that you'll have more immediate problems to deal with. Grayson, now!"
Nectalia!
There was a split second to move while motion within immediate proximity was ceased. Around Grayson, the crowd of warriors seemed to freeze, as if time had stopped. Grayson himself seemed as nimble as ever, using the back of his head as a weapon, to create a big enough gap to wriggle free. His jugular now out of danger, Gray took to the air, effortlessly vaulting over the slow-moving warriors and recalling his blade to him in the process. As Grayson vaulted, Robin's device, a simple flash grenade, impacted the ground and ignited. Robin dove to the side, having screwed his eyes tightly shut. It was only Grayson then that actually witnessed the sudden carnage. It was Grayson who saw the particularly kick-ass sight of Hunter B. McCarthy passing underneath him and over Robin's head, and smashing shoulder first into the center of the gaggle of Nakaran warriors, sending them flying in all directions, before just managing to slow himself down enough to avoid breaking bones. Robin opened his eyes just long enough to see Jamie painfully careering into one of the few remaining sacred columns still standing in the temple courtyard. This happened while one of the winged beasts she'd brought with her had her in its grip. The grip was, of course, relinquished upon impact, mangling the thing into an unrecognizable shape.
"Goddamn,"
Robin exclaimed, as both him and Grayson closed the gap, picking off stragglers from both enemy parties.
"That was pretty cool, not gonna lie,"
Grayson exclaimed, as Hunter rolled over.
"Yeah, didn't feel that cool,"
Hunter said, sounding winded. His suit was sparking out. Grayson knelt beside him, using a throwing knife to take out a staggering nun directly to his left.
"Anything broken?"
Grayson asked, his voice soft.
"Oh, sure, yeah,"
came a voice from a few yards away. Jamie's mouth sounded as if it were full of sand. "Ask them if anything's broken, why don't you?"
"As far as I can see, the only thing that you broke is that pillar."
Jamie glared as she struggled to her feet, matted Zorenya guts clinging to her hair for dear life.
"Did look pretty painful, though,"
Robin conceded. Firing off a few shots at more advancing Zorenya, he gave Jamie a sideways glance between the third and fourth shot. "But I'm sure you'll live." "Very funny," Jamie said, limping her way over to where Hunter lay.
"Looks like you overloaded your afterburners again."
"No shit,"
Hunter said, uttering a spluttered laugh that became a wince. He glanced down, regarding the righteous hat. It sat just out of his reach, and Grayson closed the gap between them.
"Keep an eye on this. We're gonna need it later."
"You guys find what you were looking for?"
Jamie asked, lifting Hunter with unseen hands.
"Yeah,"
Grayson said.
"By the skin of our teeth, at least."
"Let's not go there right now.
We should head back to Yap Sipana,"
Jamie said.
"That's where Redgrin
said to meet."
They all looked up in the direction of the new rumbling sound. A sound sourced from the mountain to the north, just across the water. Varia's Peak.
"Is that..."
Jamie said, trailing off.
"It does look like... it can't be."
"You have got to be fucking kidding me." "You don't need magic to cause an avalanche. If you stand in the right place and give yourself a loud enough round of applause, you can cause a pretty serious landslide. The ripple effects of certain movements, certain impacts, can domino their way down to utter catastrophe. And these impacts and movements do not have to be large in size or magnitude. That, perhaps, is the most terrifying thing. So when you, whoever you may be, armed with, of course, the purest and noblest of intentions, accidentally crash a cryodrake into one of the mountain peaks so hard that the peak itself breaks into pieces, what might we imagine the result to be, I wonder? Well, from what I can gather, listeners, since it happened to me, a large amount of the rest of the mountain peak falls down after you.
thousands upon thousands of cliffside shards hurtling through the air like frozen shurikens. Some as small as coins, some as big as houses. The realization that you're trapped, your hands literally frozen into place by the creature's sub-zero temperature. The creature itself, possibly concussed from its hard impact with the mountain peak, clumsily attempts to regain control, making it much harder to concentrate on igniting and burning your hands free. And yet, you do. You are finally free. But then the burden of responsibility causes you to fall faster regardless, when you realize that it is on you to minimize casualties below. You soothe yourself in the knowledge that the immediate region to which you are fast approaching is mostly unpopulated, thanks to the strangely specific trajectory. But that doesn't mean that the township-sized lump of mountain underneath you descending ever faster in tandem with the cryodrake wouldn't still do some major damage. It could certainly ruin more than one innocent person's day. And so, once taken to the air under your own power, your hands burning with the light of intention, you do the best you can. Having used a great deal of your strength to turn the biggest and most lethal pieces of debris into lovely little snowflakes, you start to feel a little faint, and so consider leaving. However, it is in that not-so-opportune moment when the cryodrake, seemingly recovered from its previous knock on the head, decides to reascend, beating its wings mid-fall, and attempts to retaliate. You are still performing a mostly controlled descent, but you realize that if it grabs you again, you might not have the strength to get free. You'll have to deliver the killing blow, but you know you can't do it alone. You start to forget the ability that allows you to not experience pain, and you start to shake, letting the elements get a foothold under your skin. You feel more lonely, more vulnerable than you have felt in eons. And then, the fear disappears. It disappears when you see the patterns of fire arcing down from above your head, causing the drake to writhe, twist, and change its trajectory. No longer heading straight for you, again, the creature is on the retreat. It is on the retreat because you are not alone. There are friends above you, and you can now see there are friends below you. To fully slay the creature, you know you must melt the heart, superheat it so the chain reaction dissolves the rest. But to do that, you must get closer. With all that you have, you increase your speed, gesturing for your companions above your head to remain at their consistent altitude. Your companions on the ground do what they can to slow the creature's descent towards the river beside Kir Nakaran, using a mixture of fire and telekinesis, willing the creature to turn one final time, turn and face you. And it does, with seconds to spare. And with your last remaining ounce of strength, you light the secret fire. Your secret fire. One hot enough to melt the coldest of hearts. And with one final blow, you strike down your enemy, falling into unconsciousness as you continue to plummet inexorably towards the shimmering water and the battered mountainside. Six. Medical Bay. House. 3 hours later.
Well, don't you all just look beautiful? Tell me, did you all have a nice time exploring the fair regions? Johnny boy, why don't we start with you? You're looking rather disturbed. Or perhaps the feeling is perturbed.
The feeling is confused. I've seen and done some strange things in the past few days, but you?
What I am, my dear, is a huge fan of you and your descendants. You and your little girl having just reconciled not only with each other, but with the empirical truth of the Demimonde, and then further thrust into the deepening sky, racing against time to retrieve that thing in your hand. Yeah, that thing there.
Yeah, they said you needed this one first.
Annulus paradoxon.
The Ring of Paradox?
Very good, detective. I see you're not the only swot in the family.
What does it do? I was expecting something a little more...
extravagant? I don't blame you. It may look like a simple silver band, but what you are in fact holding is the key to me no longer being bound to this medical bay. It ensures the stability of my physical form in a reality where I was fated to die. Basically, it keeps me from falling apart. The Righteous Hat will allow me to gain more control over my mental state, help me beam out a far more secure link to the unseen world, shedding clearer, more focused kinds of lights upon the things that lay beyond the veil. To anyone who looks at it, well, all they would see would be a classic fedora-like cranial decoration. And the shroud? The warrior nuns of the Kir Nakaran are charged with guarding the loom of fate. It has other names, but beyond weaving in and out of certain foretold histories and assisting the authors as they are known, through methods which, for now, I shall not divulge, the loom produces some of the finest sentient fabrics in the finite curve, often gifted or awarded to high-ranking Nakaran warriors. It was just a matter of liberating it from its previous owner. No doubt it'll be currently stuck in a boring robe-cut form. Poor thing. Once I work my magic, I'm sure we'll get along just fine.
I think I understood some of that.
Tell me, how did you manage to retrieve it, the ring? There are stories of perils that lie within the chambers of the mountain.
Tell me about it. Ice spike pits, razor-sharp swinging pendulum things, boulders. The ring itself was caged in some kind of viscous material that was reading hotter than hot, so we had to freeze that and break it open, which took longer than I would have liked.
Fair enough. Ingenious.
Still, despite the suits, I was terrified the entire time, but Lana really seemed to enjoy herself.
Well, that's something, at least.
Where do I,
Oh, my lord, it's no wonder you've just been standing there holding it this whole time, you poor thing.
Thanks. I just wasn't sure where to...
No, it's my fault. The least I can give you are physical fingers. Hold on a second. Wow. Yeah, not what I had in mind either, as it happens.
Okay, seriously, where do you want this thing? No offense, but I think I might be about to throw up.
Looking like this, I wouldn't really blame you. Just stick it on the closest, least threatening tendril.
Alright. Here we go.
That's much better.
Well,
we're not quite there yet, I grant you. But it's steering towards the humanoid side of palatable, wouldn't you say?
What I would say is that I no longer want to throw up.
Well, I suppose that'll have to do for now. Wouldn't want to scare the kids, which reminds me... Next! Ah, Master McCarthy and Miss Mortimer, of course.
You're looking better. If a little... long.
Like spaghetti.
Spaghetti monster with a confusing head.
You're both looking suitably bruised for your troubles.
That's what crashing into a canyon, an ancient pillar... A reptile horde? Oh yeah, there was the reptile horde thing. Then the weird nuns, and then the ice dragon.
It wasn't a dragon.
From where I was standing, it looked like a dragon.
According to Redgren, it wasn't actually a dragon. They called it a... Hey, it was a derivative of the dragon family. I helped knock it out of the sky. When I tell the story at parties, I'm saying it's a freaking dragon. Point taken. Redgren also lied about how Hunter's father's hat ended up in the cave.
You'll learn that they really don't like to admit when they drop things.
You're lucky that this hat doesn't actually fit my head.
And you're luckier to have such a devoted man for a father. And one day it will fit, Hunter. One day it will.
All right. But you better look after it.
Don't worry. I will. I have to. For my sanity and form depends on it. Vuria. Scutinia. Muscaba. Prata. That's much better. Wouldn't you say?
Oh my god.
Baby, can you dig this hat? It's a righteous hat. Baby, can you dig this hat?
Looking good, I must say. Like Helena Bonham Carter, she was in her 70s.
That'd better be a good thing, because it seems to be the most natural form I can subconsciously maintain.
You might want to flush your cheeks a little. There's pale, and then there's...
Then there's that.
Yeah, then there's that. That's coming from me, and I have no color in my face at all.
All right, I take your point, good lord. Jamie, give the rest of them a psychic shout. Who has the shroud?
I do.
You were listening this entire time, weren't you, you little rascal?
Just for the word shroud, but I overheard Spaghetti Monster and couldn't resist peeking in.
How were the nuns?
Dusty, skeletal, murderous. Not too bad.
You took out like 94 of them.
By himself?
Apparently so. Robin did his part, though.
Robin did his part. Oh, thanks a lot, partner.
Ignore him. And Hunter saved my life. Yeah, that was pretty cool.
If a little messy and sore. I'm just glad he missed the pillar.
Also ignore her. Put the shroud on, I want to see how it looks.
Well, as it seems everyone is now present. Good to finally meet you, Lana dear. And of course, my lovely little ball of perpetual potential. Grandma, it's good to see you. You're looking well. Aren't I just? Well, thanks to you and your crew. They did most of the work.
I merely showed them the doors.
Modest as ever.
You're kidding me, right? Modest?
Do shut up, dear. How's the ring working out? Well, I no longer feel like I'm being ripped apart from the inside out, and I seem to have stopped phasing in and out of existence in questionable forms. And yet, you should have every reason to be doing every one of those things. Perfect adaptable paradox. Don't lose it. And I have to say, this shroud is rather pretty. But maybe if I...
Whoa. Yeah, okay, that works.
I've always preferred long flowing coats to shrouds. But this material is nice and malleable, though we have not yet officially spoken. It seems that we have brought you back to you, my dear. That you have. Thank you all. Couldn't have done it without you. Any of you. I want you to soothe yourselves in the knowledge that I shall do everything in my power to fix what has been broken. The hope is that by doing that, some of you can put your lives back to where they should be. Even you, my child. I will not lie to you. There are far more harrowing things on the way. And things are going to get a lot worse before they get better. But that is for another time. For now, my darlings, I want you all to listen. Jamie Mortimer, the immortal breaker of hearts. Hunter McCarthy, the brave son of a tortured, righteous man. Lana Merrick, a powerhouse soon to be a paragon. The two detectives out of time. One searching for truth, the other fleeing from lies. The little grey wolf, lost again, tortured again, displaced for the first time, again. And then there's you. The reason why any of us are here at all. The being of time, broken, smiling through their pain. The one who bathes in their eternal shame, and yet remains to kill the same. All of you. You beautiful people. Listen.
Thank you.
If you're a podcast clown like I am, you must have dreamed about starting your own. Let me tell you, my dreadful darlings, it's never easy, but it's one of the best decisions I ever made. It was either that or waste away in my own subjective ascendance. Of course, it can be more than just a little overwhelming to know how to get started. Buzzsprout can help you launch your podcast professionally and in style, linking you with all of the major podcasting platforms such as Spotify, Google Podcasts, Apple Podcasts, and much, much more. Join us up in the buzzing, sprouting podcast cloud to breathe in the renowned analytical sound of the accurate analysis and promotion tools provided. Follow the link in the show notes below to start your journey and receive a $20 Amazon gift card. We're waiting for you. Buzzsprout, the best and excitingly prettiest way to start a podcast.